are going to start off on things you should know if you're going to be buying into cloud-hosted services, because it never ceases to fail. I just keep seeing more and more and more people getting ripped off by cloud-hosted solution providers. So it's always good to be learning from the experiences of others without, you know, having to suffer through the economic pain yourself. So let's get started with the story. So imagine you have a business and you have a business critical application, and your software provider says that they now have this ability to do a cloud hosted version of what you have on premise. So perhaps this is what's called SaaS, software as a service, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's IaaS, otherwise known as infrastructure as a service. So let's first understand those two different things. Software as a service is something like Office 365. This is usually a type of a service that is not consumption-based, but really it is a fixed fee per month based upon the number of licensed users. So another good example of that might be Power BI for Office 365 or Dynamics 365, certainly G Suite as well. So anything where you are paying a fixed monthly or fixed annual fee on a per licensed user basis, then that is referred to as a SaaS model. Or it's, you could see an IaaS model of as that, but it's extremely rare. So clearly, I just really don't have any problems with SaaS solutions, as long as these things financially make sense to you. So I'll give you some examples of that. I know of a number of organizations where they would like to use Power BI, but utilizing Power BI through the Office 365 model ends up being financial unobtainium. It's just too darned expensive. It's not cost effective. So it's actually more cost effective for them to have Power BI on premise. I also know of organizations that don't qualify for nonprofit Office 365 licensing, but they do qualify for on-premise nonprofit licensing. So it's not very expensive for them to have an Exchange server for email, and maybe they don't have sophisticated needs beyond that, because clearly Office 365 is a whole lot more than just an Exchange server. But maybe an organization doesn't need a whole lot more than an Exchange server. So in that context and in that circumstance, that on-premise Exchange server certainly makes loads of more sense. They buy the server one time. That server is going to last for at least 7 years. They buy the Exchange server licensing one time with the Exchange CALS one time. There it is. Now, you can do that licensing a couple of ways. You can just get the perpetual, which is why I said one time, and then you're permanently, perpetual means you're permanently licensed for that particular version of the software product. But if you want to be able to take advantage of version upgrades, then you would have to buy something called software assurance. Either that, or you just decide to repurchase the licensing 3 years, 5 years, whatever it is, however many years down the road, to the point where you then are going to take advantage of the new version of the software. And you, there's really no right or wrong answer with that. You just simply have to look at what's the cost profile that's appropriate for your business. So we've already talked a little bit here about, gee, the cost profile of cloud services sometimes just greatly outweigh the cost profile of having something on-premise. The converse can be true. However, it's extremely rare. And this extremely rare case that I'll tell you about is a situation where imagine you have an organization that has no physical facility. Everyone works remotely, or they work from different locations. So you have not already invested in a network. You don't have a company paid internet connection. You don't have servers already. You know, you don't even have an office that people are working out of. Well, in that case, clearly just buying software as a service type of things is going to be much more cost effective than obtaining an on-premise environment and then managing and maintaining that. So, this is things for you to you have to contemplate that. But I can tell you that that's really the rare side. In the vast, vast majority of cases, an organization already has a network. They already have an internet connection they're paying for. They already have UPSs. They probably already have battery generator backup for certain outlets in their data center, though however tiny their data center may be. And so putting a server in there or simply using an existing server is no big deal. And here's basically the calculus you need to think about. When you sit down and run the math and you say, well, this is what I need in terms of horsepower and resources. So you say, I need this much computing power, this much RAM, this much hard drive space of these types of profiles, of this type of speed, and so forth. And you look at that with a full, very high quality 7-year hardware warranty from the manufacturer. And what you will find is that the cloud hosting, if you are going to do that same thing in an IaaS model, in the infrastructure as a service model, remember I'm not talking here about SaaS because SaaS is usually this fixed monthly fee or fixed annual fee. But in the IaaS model, it's 100% consumption based. And they might give you an estimate, but if it goes over, you're going to have to pay. So, in this consumption model, the IaaS model, in 18 months of paying for that, you would have already exceeded the cost of what that physical server was for the entire 7 years that the thing had a warranty contract on it. So, there are very few circumstances where this stuff makes sense. And recently, I know of a case where an organization was misled, I think intentionally so, by a software company saying, oh, yeah, we've got a cloud version of our product. Really, it was not a cloud version of their product. Really, what it was is they were going to take the on-premise infrastructure and set it up in an IaaS model. And one problem after another showed up because the on-premise infrastructure worked just fine. The servers were built correctly, they were sized correctly, there was a very nice maintenance plan in place, and everything was very reliable. So there's really no issues. The only desiring advantage theoretically that existed to going to the cloud was that the people at this organization would be able to use this application from anywhere. They wouldn't have to be on premise. Now, technically, I would argue that if you had a situation like this where you wanted to have people have remote access to an application, all you would ever need to do is put up a remote desktop server. It's not very hard, nor is it very expensive, and it's typically just a virtual machine that you build on an existing server that you have. Significantly way less expensive of a solution and just as highly efficacious in contrast to, IaaS. So remember, I said I think this software company intentionally misled this customer. And what they had said was, oh, yeah, well, we'll do all the maintenance for you. You're going to be running all the latest and greatest, this and that. And we'll keep you all up to date on everything. And you pay us a managed services fee, and we'll take care of things. So, you get to looking at these, at how they actually do stuff. And there's a lot of inconsistency between what they do in practice, what they said they were going to do, and what their people are saying, and what the actual managed services contract says. So this is one of those areas where if you're not an IT service provider yourself, if you're not an expert in the IT services business, then I don't really know how you could look at one of these contracts and try to figure out how are you getting taken advantage of, or where are the components of this contract that are inconsistent and problematic How is it wrong compared to what you were told? How do you protect your interests, right? So, in that circumstance, what really should have happened is that company should have gotten me involved, and I would have been happy to look at that contract and advise them. But unfortunately, that did not happen on a proactive basis. It's happening on more of a reactive basis after the fact. And so, effectively, you look at this contract, and it says things like, we own the servers that we are virtual hosting for you. Okay, so this software company says in their contract that they own the servers, but then their service people say that no, the customer owns the servers, and therefore, then the customer is actually responsible for most of the management of the server. And that if the customer wants the managed service provider to do anything outside of a very narrow defined scope that they still haven't really defined, then that's going to be for a fee of $170 an hour. And that's kind of a bit of a shocker. So, what are they supposed to be doing? And are they actually doing it? Here's another inconsistency. So, in the case where they say they're managing a particular server, and then later on you find out, well, no, actually, we had a problem with that server. And the reason we had a problem with that server was because this company was not managing it effectively. The problem should have actually never happened. And then you start to question whether or not they actually have the technical competency to accurately do the work or effectively. So then you really have to question, what are you paying them for at that point? Now, there's a whole other interesting facet to this that you may not have thought of. Remember, I said that this is a consumption model. So you had this on-premise server that was paid for, and everything was performing very well. It has all the performance horsepower allocated to the various things that it needs to be allocated to. So your people are able to work productively. And because that thing was a one-time capital expenditure, it's bought and paid for, and you're not incurring any additional hardware-related fees with that. Sure, you do have to feed it electricity, but electricity is fairly inexpensive compared to compared to an infrastructure as a service model where you're paying consumption on everything. So per gigabyte of storage, you're typically going to be paying $1.50 per month. And so what this ends up doing, and of course you pay for number of cores in a processor, and you pay for how much RAM, and you pay for whether or not it's what's called hot storage or cold storage, or is it a managed disk, is it fast disk, is it slow disk? All these various things have these different cost profiles. So instead of a business focusing on what they should be focusing on, which is, I need a server that is going to be reliable and fast, not waste my time, my consultant's time, who bills by the hour, and my employees' time. Instead of focusing on putting in the right system, when you're dealing with a consumption model, that whole thing gets turned on its head. And what I see way too frequently is people then struggling with what appears to be ever increasing, ever growing consumption fees that they don't know how to get control over. Because they started off with, the software company tells them, oh, yeah, it was going to cost this much per month. Let's say it's $2,000 a month. I'm just pulling a number out of my hat. But then pretty soon you're up to $3,000 a month. Well, why? Well, you're up to $3,000 a month because what they spec'd for you to begin with for your servers that are hosted in their cloud is inadequate. The performance is terrible. Your people can't run reports anymore. Something that used to take, say, 30 seconds on the on-premise environment isn't finishing until 6 hours later. I mean, we're talking about that kind of a performance disparity going on here. And so, again, instead of focusing on, I need my people to be able to do their jobs, all this focus is on, Oh, well, I want to keep this monthly fee as low as it is because, my goodness, it's a monthly fee. It's just going to keep coming. So, this is the extreme neon flashing warning signs of managed services and cloud hosted servers. There is a circumstance where a cloud hosted server makes sense, and yep, I'm going to go there again. It's called the fixed monthly fee. If someone will give you a fixed monthly fee for that server that's cloud hosted and effectively treat it as if it is a service, that might not be so bad, assuming that it is all inclusive of all support. And I'm going to reiterate that again. It would have to be all inclusive of all support because you are not in a position to be looking at these contracts and looking at a managed services detail and what's included and not included in that. You're really not in a technical adept position to be trying to protect your best interests and ensure that you're not getting taken advantage of. Really, I genuinely think the only way for you to truly know your cost profile of a particular solution is to find a provider that is going to get you that thing that you're looking for on a fixed, all-inclusive monthly or annual fee. And if that's, the case, great, go for it. But very few organizations are doing that, especially when you're coupling it with two different things, which is this idea of, they're trying to lowball an estimate for you as to what this thing is going to cost. So they're always going to undersize this server infrastructure that they're going to put into their cloud, and that stuff will not match the performance profile for what you actually need. I can pretty well guarantee it. I mean, I've never seen that be the case. And if you do go in and boost that performance profile up, well, you might end up paying $1,000 per month for a single server. I mean, that's now into the, holy kittens basket. So it doesn't take a genius to realize that if you're paying $1,000 a month for a server that is cloud hosted, you might as well have just bought one on premise. And there's other aspects to this. Now, here's some other really interesting things. When you are buying something like Microsoft SQL and you want, let's say you want SQL Enterprise, well, you're going to be paying for four processor license anyways because that's it. That's Enterprise. That's SQL Enterprise. It doesn't come smaller than that. So if it doesn't come smaller than that, why would you plan on putting it on a server that doesn't have four cores of CPU allocated to it? How does that make any sense? So, this is again one of these danger zones of if you're not an IT infrastructure engineer who literally does this stuff for a living, I'm not really sure how it's possible for you to protect your interests. I think this is getting to a point where it's all great and fine and dandy to have trust with a service provider, but I think it's also beneficial to get a second opinion every now and then. Kind of think about it the same way as you'd call your attorney or you'd call your external CPA. So if you're looking to sign a contract that is associated with something that is something other than I called tech support responded, they fixed my problem, and they pay us by the hour, because this is something that's very straightforward for you to understand. If it's something much more complicated than that, that is really based upon the sophisticated details of, well, sure, these are your on-premise servers, but this is what these people are going to give you in terms of the cloud servers and what's the implications of that. And they say, well, this is what they're going to do. What are they really going to do? What are they not going to do? How much of what they're not going to do that they want to bill you by an hourly rate at 170 an hour is? I mean, this all just gets out of whack pretty quick. And it's simply due to the complexity of it. And that's Really, I think that's a lot of the drive behind this whole move to go to cloud-hosted servers. Now, again, I'm going to differentiate software as a service from IaaS because software as a service is a fixed monthly or fixed annual fee. That's fine. Do as much of that as you want. This stuff, though, that's consumption-based, where you're not really entirely sure what's included and what's not included, and maybe you don't have the technical skill to assess whether or not what they're proposing to deliver for that cost profile is actually what your business needs, you really need to be getting a second opinion. And in looking at the stuff that this software company is doing, I found that they were engaging in really obscene licensing charging fees. They're effectively charging for things that they should not be charging for, and certainly not at the rates that they're charging. I mean, to the tune of charging for Microsoft Office licenses for $20 a month per licensed user. I mean, this is crazy. And it's not, they're not charging for Office 365, it's just Office. And Office in a remote desktop environment does not cost $20 per licensed user per month. That's not what it costs. So, the moral of the story is be very, very careful about increasing the structural cost of doing business. And I think this is true for a lot of things. You may be thinking about, well, I really want to use a nice, fancy little password management application for my team so that, we're not all keeping separate passwords. So you might think you want to start using an online password management tool. Well, let's say that thing has a minimum fee of 110 per month, and that financially really only makes sense if you're going to have, say, five people using it. So is your team that big? Is that cost profile of that structurally on a monthly basis going to deliver that amount of value to your team? And then what happens in the circumstance that the internet connection is down? Are you going to be able to survive without access to those passwords because it's a hosted password management site? Then you've got the other problems of, well, gee, how are they securing that stuff? Oh yeah, this is a huge problem. And this security aspect also ends up being an enormous problem with infrastructure as a service. These people take servers and they put them into the cloud, and then they make these claims about how, well, we have a firewall at the perimeter, which, by the way, anybody who has any brains in security understands that you can't just strictly do firewalling at the perimeter. So they'll go and do things like they're going to disable Windows Firewall. There's no endpoint protection on the server. A litany of other things that are considered to be IT security standards and best practices are not being done by this cloud-hosted server company. And when you challenge them on it and say, well, what is the deal here? We had way more security when this stuff was on-premise. You guys are supposed to be doing things properly and professionally. So what's going on here? And when they come back and they say, no, this is the way that we do it, and then you look at your contract and it basically says they can do whatever they want. Well, this is another sign that questions were not asked and answered and put in detail in the contracts before you signed them. So, again, part of the complexity of these things is, do you have the skills to know what things need to be in that contract? Should it have been a process where the entire on-premise infrastructure that was going to be cloud-hosted, that should have been put into a spreadsheet, and that these resources were contractually agreed to at a particular rate, and said this is the amount of resources that will be allocated to each one of these cloud-hosted servers, and then a specification for this is how security will be done. This is how backups will be done. This is how access control will be done. This is when the change window is. This is who will have what responsibilities. What is the entirety of what is included in managed services? You know, if you're not getting all of this detail, well, I think that's some pretty scary stuff, because that's going straight into the realm of you don't know what's going to happen. And I can guarantee you one thing, which is that the response pattern by the vast majority of these companies that are in this cloud-hosted server business, anything and everything that they consider to be outside of what they deem to be good enough is another expense. So if good enough was not mutually agreed to, if the definition of good enough was not mutually agreed to in the contract before you signed it, you really don't have much recourse. And what they're going to always do is to say, well, it's out of standard with what we think is adequate. And we don't know why you're having performance problems. We don't know why it takes 6 hours to run a report. We don't know. That's your problem. So, we can give you more horsepower, but it's going to cost you this much more. And every conversation turns into, yes, you can have more resources. You can have more cores. You can have more RAM. You can have more disk, but it will cost you this much more. So remember what I said about how when you go to a consumption-based server hosting model, it turns the entire thing on its head. And you also have to realize one other really, really scary aspect of this, which is that this is a cloud-hosted server on their infrastructure for which they're managing the backups. And they're not even telling you how they're backing it up or where they're backing it up to. You have no access to these backups. If you look at your contract, it usually says, sure, you own your data, but they own the servers. And if you don't pay that monthly fee, they will turn the servers off. So what then is your recourse? Not much. Your only recourse is to find somebody else to help you get off of their services, whether it means going back on premise or it means going to a less shady cloud server hosted solution provider. You know, but get some help from somebody who's actually going to be honest with you about the cost profile of things and be honest with you about what is included and not included. You know, I hear this thing all the time from managed service providers where they're talking about, oh, you know, you're just getting, you know, nickeled and dimed and you're getting feed to death with hourly rates and stuff. And I find that to be preposterous, because the vast majority of organizations that have IT services on an hourly rate basis, these are things that would have never been covered under a managed services contract to begin with. And it's all consumption-based, so they have 100% control over it. If they don't want to incur those fees at that time, they don't. If they want to, they do. And you get quality service as opposed to lower-level technicians who are just trying to do as little as possible in order to maximize the margin on the monthly fee that the company is receiving from you. So I think that managed services in a very, very, very limited scope can be useful, assuming that you know very specifically what is included and not, and it needs to be in writing about what is included.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com. Support comes from Kenosha Winter Harbor Market, featuring Sky Mountain Kettle Corn. You'll find them at this week's market just outside the entrance. The market is open at the Rohde Center for the Arts in downtown Kenosha this Saturday from 10 until 2 for the last time this season. From the WGTD Arts and Other